Okay, so let's continue with great Jewish faith. One of my favorite quotes is from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was, of course, the great Gadol who lived in Bnei Brak and really was considered to be the leader of the community, and not just in Bnei Brak, but really the entire Eretz Yisrael. He was looked at as the father of the Haredi community. And he has a sefer called Emuna U'Bitachon, which obviously is on the topic of Emuna U'Bitachon. And he basically clarifies what the difference is between Emuna and Bitachon. Emuna and Bitachon, they seem very similar, and oftentimes I think people think they're interchangeable. You know, I have Emuna and Bitachon. What is the difference between Emuna and Bitachon? So we've spoken about the Ramban, who has one approach. The Chazon Ish says something very interesting. He says that really it's the same thing. Emunah and Bitachon both mean that I believe in Hashem. But he says Emunah, faith, is the theory of relying on Hashem, while Bitachon, trust, is putting that into practice. What that means is that I could claim that I have Emunah. And all Jews basically are Maminim B'nai Maminim. We do have Emunah. I believe in Hashem. I believe that Hashem runs the world. I believe that Hashem is a Kol Yachol. He could do anything that he wants. I believe there's Hashgacha Pratis. I believe that Hashem causes Parnassa to happen. He can make people sick and he can make people healthy and he could do anything. I think we all believe that. That's Emunah. What's Bitachon then? Bitachon is, I have faith in that belief, in not just theoretically, but practically. Meaning if it's a nice day outside and everything is going my way and I'm doing well in school, I'm doing well with money, I'm doing well with shidduchim, everything is going my way, I have emunah. But bitachon is when your emunah is actually tested. When things are not going our way, when things are suddenly difficult, whether it's difficult nationally or whether it's difficult personally, whether we have just some major crisis in our life or even a minor crisis. And now, what's the first thing that we do? What's the first? So sometimes people say, God, you hate me. Like, why are you doing this to me? You know, I thought you loved me. I thought everything was good. And now I see you don't love me. That's one approach that people have, but that's showing, in a sense, that our emunah was very superficial. It was just basically a few centimeters high. It wasn't real. It was just something that I was taught to say, or maybe I thought I meant. But bitachon is when I'm actually challenged with a real-life issue, and I still show that I believe in Hashem. I could still say, Emir Tz Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Gamzu L'Taiva, Hashem Yazar. I can say all these things and really mean it. That's bitachon. Bitachon is boots on the ground. Do you really have faith when things get rough? It's easier, he says, to talk the talk when everything is good, when things are calm and under control. But it's harder, far harder, to walk the walk when challenging times arise. And so bitachon, those moments that we're stressed and those moments that we're challenged are the best times to test, to put to the test whether we really, really have emunah or not. Everybody has emunah when everything is going great. It's not so difficult to have emunah. Fits in nicely with our master plan and everything is good. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, I'm doing well. Everything is good by me. So I could say, Baruch Hashem, Yirtzeh Hashem, Ebefol emunah. But as we know, hopefully we don't know, but as we know, when things are suddenly not so good and suddenly we're faced with stresses, with medical issues and with family issues and with money issues and with shidduch issues, and all of a sudden we're like, things become very difficult and very stressful for us. Bitachon means that I'm showing that I actually live a life of emunah. It's not just I'm talking a life of emunah, but I'm actually living that even when things are really bad, I'm still feeling Hashem's presence. I'm still acting in a way that's appropriate with my emunah, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm talking the right way, I'm thinking the right way, I'm still in a good place, because I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. As David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, Gam ki elech begeitz al mabes, even when I'm walking in the valley of death, in the worst circumstances, lo ira ra, I don't fear any evil, ki ata imadi, because you are with me. That's bitachon. Bitachon is when things are really bad, do you still believe in Hashem? And this is something that people have been put to the test time and time again in the concentration camps. That was a real gates on Lubbock. That was a valley of death. We're going through another valley of death in our own generation. Who could believe that, you know, Simchas Torah, another valley of death that you see, like the atrocities, how much the Gayim and Befrat B'nai Yishmael hate us. And it's frightening, it's terrorizing. That's why they call them terrorists, because they want to put fear into us. They want to play with our brains, and they want to mess with us and make us question ourselves and our strength and our fortitude. And we have to push back at times like that and say, no, I believe in Hashem. I think things are very difficult, but I still believe in Hashem. And when you could do that, then that's bitachon. Bitachon is a higher level than emunah, because it's emunah when you're being tested. So the Chazon Ish says, it is easy to trust in Hashem when life is good. Much harder, though, is maintaining bitachon when one actually needs it. This is the photograph that I used to illustrate this. It's a guy standing somewhere, and his umbrella flies away. It's like a gray day, you need your umbrella, and all of a sudden a wind goes and blows you. When you have an umbrella, you feel, okay, I'm able to take on the day. I don't care if it rains because I'm protected, right? That's emunah. Bitachon is when you lose your umbrella, now you don't feel, you know, that sense of security. You feel very vulnerable, but you still say, I believe in Hashem, everything is going to be good. That is what bitachon is all about. This is an illustration of the Chazon Ish. Okay, let's see another important yesod. Yeah, there's so many of them. This is a good one. I'm sure everybody heard of the Esh Kodesh of Piazetzna. So this is what he looked like. A great Hasidic Rebbe from Europe before the war. He was an inspiration to many in the Warsaw Ghetto. Many people listened to him and took very great strength even in the darkest hour. He was, of course, killed al Kiddush Hashem. Interestingly, he put a lot of his speeches and his chizuk that he gave into a milk canister, which was like a very... a milk canister in the olden days was like a very... it was like a watertight, sealed vessel. And he hid it somewhere under the Warsaw Ghetto. And miraculously, after the war was over, they did some, I don't know, I think it was a construction worker. Maybe they were digging up some road or something. And they found this package with a canister of the Piazetzna in it. Mm-hmm. And they have, and because of that, we have the Sefer Esh Kodesh exists because of that that great act of providence. So, on the 19th of Iyar in the year 1929, the Rebbe reached his 40th birthday, the Piazetzna Rebbe, one of the great Hasidic Rebbes. And he wrote a letter to himself. Normally, we write letters to other people, if we even write letters anymore. Today, everything is email, right? Very few, do you ever, like, stick a letter in the mail with a stamp ever? Never, right? That's an art that's long been, it's beautiful. So many letters that we have today from Gedolei Yisrael and Lahavdil, presidents and generals, they're sold on auction. Imagine if everything was email, or it wouldn't be chashev, everything, it was an art. They wrote it with their handwriting, and there was different nuances in the letter. The way people wrote was very, very telling. So most of the time, people used to write letters to other people, but the Piazetzna and many, many people, if they're thinking good, people who work on themselves, they write letters to themselves. And he undertook, so he basically wrote a 40th birthday card to himself. What did he write in this card? So he wrote as follows. He said that on this, my 40th birthday, he says, I have, Baruch Hashem, everything. I have, I'm wearing all the right external things. I have a black, you know, bekisha, and I have a strimal, and I have a beard, and I have payas, and I have, and I give speeches, and I give shiurim. Everything looks good. Everything is fine. He says, but there's one thing that I'm lacking on my birthday. He says, I'm lacking, simply put, to be a Jew. I have all the right externals, but I lack a soul. And he ends his letter with a prayer. Master of the universe, I confess to you who observes all hidden matters, and before you I plead. I am cast so far from you. Your chambers are so distant from me. I simply wish to convert and from this day forward to become a Jew. Help me so that I do not squander my remaining years. Draw me near to you and allow me to enter your inner chambers. What does he mean by this? What he means is that a lot of times in life, we go through similar things. We're wearing our yarmulkes, we have our tzitzis, we go to daven, and we learn, and we're in yeshiva, and we're doing everything. And sometimes, like, we have to stop and restock a little bit and take stock of our situation and ask ourselves, okay, all the externals I have the right, I look like a yeshiva boy, I'm wearing my yarmulke, I'm wearing my tzitzis, I have everything. But what's my relationship like with Hashem? People that look at me, my family, my friends, the people davening in my shul back at home, they all think that I'm a good yeshiva bacher, they think that I'm a big tzaddik, and that I'm really, you know, but what do I think about myself? How would I assess my own personal relationship with God? Because at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. The Piazetzna was authentic. He was a real, genuine person, and he wasn't, like, going to be fooled by just going through his life, going through his whole life, doing the motions of being a firm Jew. Because we could do that our whole lives. We could go through literally the rest of our lives and everybody, oh wow, he's amazing, you know, he's rocking it, he's davening, he's wearing tefillin every day, he's in a yeshiva, and he's going to marry a firm girl, and now he has a firm family, and his grandchildren, and you can go through literally your whole life, but it might be just a big charade. Because at the end of the day, do you have a soul? Do you feel close to Hashem? Sometimes we're so busy with our externals, and we ourselves are fooled. Besides we're fooling others with our externals, we're fooling ourselves. Because when push comes to shove, maybe we're not as close to Hashem as we should be. Maybe our relationship with Hashem is severely lacking. And when nobody is around, what do? If let's say we're in a room just by ourselves and there's no friends, there's no family, what do we do then? And that's sometimes a very good litmus test to how close we are to Hashem. If we're, you know, in bed and we're saying Tillim and we're davening or reading a book about a gadol or we're chazering shir or we're doing, you know, we're listening to a Torah shir online or we're listening to nice Jewish music and we're relaxed, that's all good. But sometimes when we're alone in a room, we're looking at things that we're not supposed to, we're listening to things that we're not supposed to, because nobody's here. Oh yeah, God is here. But God is secondary to me. It became just a big charade our life. We're just doing things for other people and what other people think is the most important thing. But when you strip it all away and you realize that it's all a veneer, it's just a scam, that's the time that you have to, like, you know, do something about it. It took the Piazetzna till his 40th birthday to write this letter to himself and to be real and to be genuine. He says to Hashem, I'm lacking, you know what I'm lacking on my birthday? You know, I have a strimal, I have a kapata, I have a bekasha, I have the tzitzis, I have the tefillin, I have the Rabbeinu Tams, I have everything. There's one thing that I'm lacking, and that's to be a Jew. He says, I want to convert. He wasn't a guy. What do you mean convert? He says, I need to convert. I want to be a Jew. What do you mean? Aren't you a Jew? No, I'm not. I'm a fake Jew. I'm a Jew that's fooling everybody. So people think I'm a Jew, but I'm not really a Jew. I heard once the expression, or more than once. You ever heard of the concept of a reverse Marano? What's a Marano? Marano is somebody in Spain when the church was going after the Jews and they forced them to convert. So some Jews ran away. They got out. Some Jews got burned at the stake. They got killed because they insisted on staying Jewish. And some Jews converted to Catholicism. Now, of those Jews that converted to Catholicism, many of them remained Jewish secretly. Like, for example, they would keep a Pesach Seder in their basement, only their family, and nobody knew that they were Jewish. Outside, they took their yarmulke off and they acted like guy, and maybe they went to church. But inside, they wanted to keep being Jewish. So they were Goyim on the street, and they were Jewish in the privacy of their own homes. They kept Shabbos, they kept Yantiv, they did mitzvahs, maybe they put on tefillin. But it's been said that today we're reverse Moranos, which means that in the street we act Jewish. We go through the motions outside. When we're outside of the house, we act Jewish. But when we're in our own rooms, we act like Goyim. Which is worse? I'd say this is worse, because at least, you know, they wanted to keep Jewish, so they felt they didn't want to die. Maybe they're supposed to die la locha, but they didn't want to die, but at least they kept Jewish internally. But what about people like that externally are acting Jewish, but internally are not really, you know, sincere Jews? So the Piazetzna teaches us something very important. And it's, you don't have to wait till you're 40 or you're 50 or you're 90 to chap this, but do it at your age. And just try to work on being authentic. I want to be a Jew because I want to be a Jew. And if I'm not a Jew, then I have to convert to being a Jew. I have to make myself a Jew. I have to make myself, what is a Jew? A Jew is somebody that their heart is full of emunah and bitachon. They really believe it. And because they believe it, they act differently. They act differently, not just in public, but in private. And the superficials are stupid. Like it's not stupid. It's important to wear a yarmulke, to look Jewish, and to act Jewish externally. But it doesn't really do the entire job. The entire job is that internally you're supposed to feel Jewish and behave Jewish. And I think that what happened on October 7th on Simchas Torah this year, I think it was a sea change in Klai Yisrael. I hope that it changed, that it doesn't change. I hope we don't go back to being, you know, the same old, but you see, like, what's going on around the world. Jews, even not religious Jews, are beginning to, they want to wear tzitzis, and that's why the army, all the soldiers want tzitzis. So you see these videos, did you ever see these videos of, like, from people like Hasidim or Yeshua Bachrim, and they're, like, making tzitzis on khaki t-shirts, because, you know, people want to wear tzitzis there. These soldiers don't want to go into Gaza without tzitzis. Where did this come? These aren't people that are from. But everybody's feeling like they want to be Jewish now. The Hamas did something that our friends could never have accomplished. Sometimes when you have an enemy that's so disgusting and despicable, it reminds us that we're Jewish. Otherwise, on a good day, we don't have to think that we're Jewish. Everybody loves us. Everything is great, you know. But when things go really, really bad in life, unfortunately, it has to come to this. But when things are very bad, it reminds us we're Jewish. It reminds us what's important in life. It reminds us we need a relationship with Hashem. And the achdus that exists today in Klal Yisrael, the unity, how Hasidim and Chilonim and everything in between are getting along, helping each other, dancing with each other, volunteering to do anything and everything that they possibly can to help the war effort, to help each other, and to get close to Hashem. It's remarkable what we're feeling these days. And I hope that it continues, and maybe it's going to be the reason that Mashiach comes right now, and that's what we're davening for. But there is something so important about this letter that the Piazetzna wrote to himself. Maybe we should write a letter to ourselves also and try to figure out, what exactly, who we are, where we're holding, what we need to do to change. Let's do one more. This is sort of like a good segue from what we were just talking about. You know, there are many very bright people in the world that are atheists. You know, there are people that are brilliant and they're atheists. There are people that are very, very bright and they're Eved Avodah Zarah. If they're so bright, if they're so brilliant, shouldn't they be thinking rationally? Like, we don't believe in Judaism just because our parents believed in it. There are reasons that we believe in it. There are reasons we believe in God. Avraham Avinu, this week's parasha, was the first person in the history of the world that, quote unquote, discovered God, realized that this world can't exist without a God. There must be a creator. And just as if you would walk in the middle of a desert and all of a sudden you see like a big mansion, no one in their right mind would say, oh, the mansion must have been created by itself. You know, there must have been a builder. Avraham Avinu sees a whole world with galaxies and with stars and moons and sun and insects and animals and fish and birds, and this can't have happened by itself. There had to be a creator. Isn't that a simple thing? That's a simple calculation. But yet there are many people that would very quickly disprove what you said. If I would go to Harvard University, you see how intellectually honest they are, right? You see they're all anti, not all, but you know, they have anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian protests in Harvard University. Very bright people in Harvard. And yet they don't see what happened on Simchas Torah. They're just completely in the can for Hamas, like an Arab group, a terrorist group that raped and pillaged and murdered babies, beheaded soldiers. Like, how could the civilized world, the greatest of the civilized world, in the Ivy League school of Ivy League schools, how could they, in unison almost, agree with the professors that Hamas is right, pro-Palestine, yay, go Palestine? What's going on? How do they do that? That's one question. Another question is, how do they not believe in God? Shouldn't every bright intellectual Ivy League person or a really, you know, clear-thinking person, shouldn't everybody believe in God? Is it so difficult to believe in God? Somebody smart once said that you need to be a much bigger maimon, a much bigger believer in Darwinism than in creationism, than in God. Because Darwin, you know, that there was a big bang, which it mathematically is impossible, that everything should have just come together on its own, and you know, there was a big bang and exploded, and then there was like something happened in the universe and Earth was created, and Earth, not just was Earth created, oceans and moon and bacteria and flies and grasshoppers and giraffes, come on, and human beings. That just happened by accident? It's just a complete accident. Is that believable? Isn't it much more believable just to say there is a creator, there's God, he created the world? No, that we can't say. Why can't people say that? Why is it so difficult for people to acknowledge that there is a creator? I just proved it in 2 minutes that there is a creator. If you go to a place, if you see a house, you see a computer, you see a phone, you see a book, somebody did this. There's somebody that did this. It's obvious. So why can't we see, if we see a world, all of a sudden then no one did it? Chas v'shalom, nobody did it. It must have been done by just a big explosion, big bang, and things just fell into place perfectly, which it's impossible. It's physically impossible. It's like, I don't remember, there was another big...
Albert Einstein said, there are exact calculations. It forces me to say God exists, but I don't want
it. Is what?
It's like his last work,
was
his
what?
Last study.
Was what? What did he say?
Einstein basically said the calculations of the world existing is so precise that I have this belief in God, but I don't want him, so I won't.
You mean he should believe in God, but he doesn't want him. Okay, so at least he was honest. He didn't want to believe in God. And that's basically what Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes in one of his Sfarim. This is Rabbi Chanan. And Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes, one of the greatest Gedolei Yisrael that we had before the war. He was also killed during the war, martyred during the war. But he says that the reason why people don't believe in God is because they're bribed. They're bribed. What are they bribed by? Like, just like a judge, the Torah says, if you give a bribe to a judge, he might be a brilliant, brilliant rabbi, but if you bribe a judge, it will blind him. It will blind him. This is what the Torah says. If you give $10 to a judge, you give a compliment. Wow, I love your great tie, beautiful tie you're wearing. What do you call a judge? Your something, whatever. In court, what? Your Honor, thank you. Your Honor, beautiful tie. The judge should immediately disqualify himself from judging. Why? Because he's already going to be partial to that person. But he's a very smart rabbi. Why should he be partial? Because that's the reality. The reality is that if you bribe somebody, he can't see things clearly. It distorts his vision. What's the bribe that people have today to believe from believing in God? What would be the reason why you would not believe in God? What's your bribe? What's the reason? Why would my vision suddenly be distorted? I'd rather believe in something that's like mathematically impossible over believing just simply there's a creator in the world. What do you think that would be?
We're not the top dog. Someone's above us.
I don't know. I don't think anyone thinks that they're that great, that they're God. I hear what you're saying. Think for a second. If you would have a reason to not believe in God, to believe in evolution, what would that reason be?
Freedom.
Oh, exactly. It's geschmack. I mean, think about what life would be if there is no God in the world. Think about that. Think about it from that. Let's say I tell you, Rabbi say, it's all not true. There's no God in the world. Evolution, Big Bang. What would you do? What would be the first thing you do? Really? There's no God in the world? That means I don't have to keep Torah. I don't have to keep mitzvahs. I don't have to worry. I have no guilty conscience. I could do anything and everything that I want. Great. Let's bring it on. Right? Now I could go to bars. I could have girlfriends. I could have, I could watch anything I want. It's great. It's a great life. That's the biggest bribe, says Rabbi Chanan. The dream of having complete freedom, as you put it, to have complete liberty to do anything and everything that I want. I could talk the way I want. I could curse. I could drink. I could do drugs. I could do every taiva that I want. That's a very strong bribe. It's a very powerful bribe, and that's the bribe that makes even very brilliant people say there's no God. Rationally, it makes no sense. Albert Einstein, one of the smartest people of the past 100, 200 years, admitted that mathematically evolution makes no sense. I just don't want to believe in God. They don't want what? People don't want to believe in God because it's so much easier. Life is so much, more. You have the freedom when you don't believe in God. But of course, the reality is, getting back to reality, is that there is a God and there is judgment and Hashem does have expectations of us and we can't live a life that is hefker, we can't live a life that's just free. We have to live with the Shulchan, we want to live with the Shulchan, and we know that the most beautiful life could be led as a Jew, as a from Jew. You're not sacrificing anything. I don't think I am eat better than Jews. I don't think they sleep better than Jews. I don't think they have necessarily a better quality of life or quantity of life. So being a Jew, you're not sacrificed, but they don't know that. And so it's very easy for people to deny the existence of God, even if you have generally a rational mind, because the passions of the heart blind man from seeing that truth. So we have to be very careful, to stay true to Hashem, like we said before, about the Piyazetzna and how we have to be true to ourselves. And being true to ourselves is building a very strong relationship with Hashem and not allowing the Yetzirah and all of the many seducers in the world to get the better of us by the promise, the false promise of an elusive freedom and lack of conscience, because obviously we don't believe that. We believe that there is a God, there has to be a creator, and the creator demands certain things of us, expects certain things, and we want that. We want that close relationship. But if you're wondering, why is it, how could it be, if it's so clear that he's, how come I took evolution in high school, or, on the Regents they have evolution, obviously it must be, if the Regents are giving evolution, so then it must be true. How could so many smart people believe in evolution if it's not true? The answer is because smartness does not mean, you know, that you always get the right answer. When you're bribed, as smart as you are, all of your wisdom goes out the window. All your rationality goes out the window because you want to get the carrot. You want to be able to get the taiva. And so they're willing to disrupt all of their rational thinking in order to be able to go after their taivas. And that is the famous yesod of Rav Chaim Wasserman.